Thank you, Jenna, Gail, Dawn, and David. We see you, and we love you, and we appreciate you. Thank you so much. So when this topic was suggested to me, I didn't think of it on my own, just so you know. I did a little research on it, and I came across this list of 10 guideposts for wholehearted living. The first, and it's from a book by Brené Brown called Daring Greatly. And the first is cultivating authenticity, letting go of what people think. Cultivating self-compassion, letting go of perfectionism. Cultivating a resilient spirit, letting go of numbing and powerlessness. Cultivating gratitude and joy, letting go of scarcity and fear of the dark. Cultivating intuition and trusting faith, letting go for the need of certainty. Cultivating creativity and letting go of comparison. Cultivating play and rest and letting go of exhaustion as a status symbol and productivity as our self-worth. Cultivating calm and stillness, letting go of anxiety as a lifestyle. Cultivating meaningful work, letting go of supposed to and self-doubt. Cultivating laughter, song, and dance, and letting go of being cool and always in control. So I don't know what wholehearted living means to everyone. I guess we all have a different definition, but to me, it means living not just from our heads and our intellect, but living from our hearts. That means living as my God self, my authentic self. I have been to a Sunday school, and one of the things they say to their children is, I see you as you really are. Because oftentimes we choose not to be the truth of what we are. It takes courage. It takes courage to live wholeheartedly. It takes courage to allow yourself to be vulnerable, to allow yourself to take off those costumes and those masks that we wear every day so we think that people will find us acceptable. For some reason, we may feel like we don't quite measure up. We often let those masks and costumes define us instead of being what we tell the children, we see you who you really are. Courageous to be our unique and authentic selves and to understand that each one of us is unique. Each one of us has our own unique gifts to bring to this world. Every single one of us has something to offer, and we can remember the world does not owe us a living, but we do owe the world a living. We owe the world a living of living as our authentic selves, bringing our unique gifts to play in this world today. Many of us spend a lot of time trying to be something we're not, or someone we're not. And I can't be Dawn, and I can't be Dana, and I can't be Lynn. Those people are already taken. There's no room in there for me, so I need to be myself. Each one of us needs to find our own true calling. Each one of us has an opportunity to live our own truth. Trying to be something we are not causes us to fail on two fronts. I fail at trying to be Dana because she's already there. And at the same time, I'm failing at trying to be me because I'm not letting my unique talents come forward while I'm trying to be something that I'm not. We are who we are, and we should be so grateful for that. Now, I don't know where that comes from exactly, but I think it has to do with growing up. We played follow the leader, didn't we? And what was that game you had to mimic with the other person? Simon Says. Simon Says. And we still do play Simon Says sometimes, don't we? Simon Says, I need to be a good wife. Simon Says, I need to be a good mother. Simon says, I need to. And I try to fill that role according to what other people's expectations are of what I need to be. Now, much of my, I don't know about you, but much of my life, I've been a chameleon. Yes. Changing to fit whatever the environment required of me at the time, right? I got to be a good student. I was a good student because that was the expectation. Not because that's what I chose to do, but that was the expectation. And oftentimes, that comes from how we learn to value ourselves. And sometimes it comes from the environment in which we grow up. Sometimes it is safer to be what they expect us to be. Because if you leave that mold, you meet a lot of resistance from your peers, from your parents, and from your authority figures in your life. We try to do what we should do so that we can be good enough, don't we? And now as adults, we still try. Interestingly enough, this morning, I woke up to the song, I don't get no satisfaction, but I try and I try and I try. I don't get no satisfaction. No, no, no. And isn't it time to give up trying? Isn't it time to give up trying and go into being, to embracing the truth of who we are, to embracing our wholeness? It is time to be courageous. And when you try to be yourself, when you really try to be authentic and let go of all of that, sometimes it feels like we're swimming upstream, going against the current. But we can do it because we are strong and powerful people. We are strong and powerful people. And as we continue to move forward, we begin to see our own inherent worth. I am worthy. You are worthy. What they think does not affect the truth of who I am. And you matter. You have a gift to bring to the world. I have a gift to bring to the world. She has a gift to bring to the world, and every one of those gifts matter. I'm important. You're important. You have a gift. To be your authentic self truly is a blessing to the world. And we can do it. And we can do it today. And as we're doing it, we can practice compassion with ourselves on the journey. Self-compassion. What a concept, right? It allows us to embrace ourselves with kindness and with love. It allows us to be compassionate with ourselves. It's often easier to be compassionate with other people. Some of them are more difficult than others because they mirror some of our behaviors, I think. But is it easy to say, oh, that's okay, Dawn. You'll do better next time. But what do you do when you do it? What you do is you beat yourself up. You do not show yourself the same compassion that you show to another person. It's okay if they have to try a second time, but by golly, I should be able to do it right and do it right the first time. And then when someone says, oh, good job, we say, anybody could have done it. We discount ourselves, don't we? We can say to Karen, that was a wonderful job you did, and we feel fine about that. But when someone says it to us, we say, it was nothing. We fail to show ourselves the same compassion that we show for someone else. We seem to forget that you and I are part of them. We're part of the everyone, and we deserve the same compassion that our neighbor does. We deserve the same compassion that our neighbor does. And how about this? We make a mistake and we say, told you so. I told you, you knew that's what was going to happen. I tried to warn you, you just wouldn't listen, right? Maybe I'm the only one that does that. But the Buddha said, this is the prayer, the Buddhist prayer. May I be well. May I be happy. May I be free from pain and suffering. And Thich Nhat Hanh says to us, darling, when someone says to us, darling, I care about you, I care about your suffering, a deep healing begins. Can you say that to yourself? Just try that. Darling, I care about your suffering, and a deep healing begins. Sometimes we forget that when a loss occurs, it's okay to be sad. It is okay to be sad. You don't have to suck it up. It's okay to be sad and to be vulnerable. It is an experience that is shared by everyone. Everybody has their times in their life when they get to feel vulnerable and they get to feel sad. And I would guess if you go around this sanctuary, there are people who are suffering the loss of a relationship or the loss of a loved one or are worried about their children or are worried about their parents. Don't you think? Because we all share in that. We're human beings. But also, here's what Helen Keller says. Although the world is full of suffering, it is full of the overcoming of it. Let's face it, we all have stuff, don't we? We all have stuff. But I'm guessing, in addition, if you were to go around this room, you would find people who have begun a new relationship, who have recovered from an illness, who have recovered from an addiction, because we are resilient human beings. We are resilient. And here's something I read the other day, and I can't remember where, but what the man says is, I no longer see the glass as half empty or the glass as half full. I see the glass, and there's something in it. And for that, I am truly grateful. Yeah, and for that, I am truly grateful. So that brings us to gratitude. A while back, we did gratitude journals. Anybody here do their gratitude journal? Mine can go on for pages and pages and pages. I have so many things to be grateful for. So many things to be grateful for. It's not I don't have stuff to deal with. Those of you who know me know I do. But I so also buy into what Jamie Lula says in his song, I have so much more to be grateful than to be sorry for. I have so much more to be grateful than to be sorry for. And here's what I know for sure. It doesn't matter what brought me to it, whatever that experience was. It doesn't matter what brought me to it. God brought me through it. My faith in the divine brought me through that experience and out of the tunnel on the other side, right? I am so grateful. So last month, I had my first great-granddaughter. Yeah. And the miracle of that is I'm only 26. I don't know how that, well, I might be a little bit older than 26. But don't we all have things that bring us joy and we all have things to be grateful for? Every single one of us has something to be grateful for. And so I'm going to move into intuition and trusting faith. It is so important to listen to that still small voice within. And you'll know when it's truly your intuition and not your wishful thinking. You can tell the difference. And when you listen to that intuition and you act upon it, usually things turn out wonderful. That's how I came to Alaska. How often have you heard that little voice and ignored it? And you pay the price, right? I paid the price. It's so important. It's so important to listen to our ideas, to decide which ones really come from our intuition, to put our faith in them, to believe in them, to see them in experience and allow them to happen. We don't care how. All we need to do is see what the outcome is, and Spirit moves through us and brings it into our experience. It does the work. It's your thinking that creates your reality. And this one is very important to me. Let go of comparison. Do we ever do that? He's smarter than I am. He makes more money than I do. She's prettier than I am. She has nicer things than I do. I don't know if I like that. You know? But don't we? We compare ourselves to others. And here's the interesting part about that. We only see the part of them they let us see, and we don't really know that they're happy. We don't know that. We make assumptions based on what we project on them, don't we? We make assumptions that they're happier than we are because they have this fabulous stuff that we don't have. The truth is, we're all very much alike. And we're all very different. Just like the snowflakes, there are no two identical snowflakes. There are no two identical people. Even identical twins are not totally identical. But the thing of that is we're all made of the same stuff. We're all made of God's stuff. Both those snowflakes are made of God's stuff. You and the Pope are both made of the same God stuff. You and the president, you're made of the same God stuff. And you and that guy that's on death row, he's made of the same stuff too. We're all made of God stuff. Have you ever been told by someone you can't do that? You have a fabulous idea, or at least to you it's a fabulous idea, and they say you can't do that, won't work. Remember, you're at choice. You're at choice to listen to that naysayer or to listen to that voice within you that's moving you forward to your highest good. We're always at choice. Thinking creatively can cause us to look a little bit different. Maybe some people might even call us odd. But I'm okay with that. I'm okay with being a little bit odd. I am. Because thinking creatively causes us to get in contact with our higher self. It causes us to live in this moment. It causes us to use our imagination and to feel that connectedness with one another and with the divine. Creativity is a spiritual force. It flows in us, it flows through us, and we use that creative force to bring into our life the things that we truly, truly desire with good for all concerned. We need to be open and aware of that creative force. We need to nourish it. We need to nourish it. Ernest Holmes says, we are all thinking, willing, knowing, conscious centers of life. We are surrounded by, immersed in, and there is flowing through us a creative something. Call it what you will. And here's what else we can do. We can play creatively, can't we? We can play. Play can bring you to that really great place, that really great place of calmness. You know, when you play so hard, you're just exhausted, and you just to fall into that place of restfulness and calmness. Playing does wonders for your spirit and for your health. Many of us work. Some of us want to work, some of us have to work, but many of us work. And that is how we survive in this world, right? It can be meaningful work or not, but we usually do it for money, don't we? Because it helps us thrive, and sometimes life can seem like it's a pretty serious business. But it's important to balance in our lives the work and the play. Our work brings us the necessities of life, and our play brings us the creativity in life. Because think about it, play has no specific purpose. It has no purpose. It allows us to surrender control. Like I said earlier, letting go of control. Playing allows us to surrender control and just be. Look at kids playing and having fun. They're having fun. How often do you have fun? How often do you have fun? Playing allows life to happen. Now, when I say playing, I don't mean bridge or chess or one of those intellectual things. Because that's really not playing if you're, you know, I mean playing with no specific purpose or goal in mind. Just letting your intellect take a little nap and having a good time and surrendering to the moment. And then let go of anxiety as a lifestyle. Now, I'm not saying you'll never be anxious. We all have anxious moments. I have a moment now and then. But we can breathe into that moment. We can breathe. And so I'm going to ask you to do that with me now. I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. And I'm going to ask you to take a breath. And as you breathe into the count of eight. Hold it for the count of seven. Breathe out to the count of four. Try that again. Breathe into the count of eight. Hold it to the count of seven. Breathe out to the count of four. Some of us have to breathe a little faster than others because we run out of breath. But there's something about when you let go of that breath, you just kind of plummet down into this pool of calmness. And I'll tell you that that exercise works at night if you're having trouble go to sleep. Try that. And pretty soon you'll wake up in the morning and not remember when you went to sleep, because what's happening is you're focusing your mind on the counting. You're focusing on your breath, you're focusing on the counting, and you don't have time to focus on what you're anxious about at the same time. And so as you're doing that, you're letting go and allowing yourself to relax. And then I'm going to bring up something I brought up before, but it bears repeating. It's about a class I took, and it's about a class on worrying, and we were told to get up in the morning, and I don't care if you sit in the chair or you sit on the edge of your bed, set your timer for 10, 15 minutes. You can choose depending upon how much you have to worry about. And then I want you to worry until the timer rings. You know, you set the timer, 10, 15 minutes, you worry, everything you can think of. You worry until the timer rings. And then once the timer rings, you're done. You're done for today. You don't get to worry again for 24 hours. If something comes up for you, you got to store it until tomorrow morning because you get to worry about it in that 10 minutes. And it sounds really crazy, but I got to tell you, it works. It really does work. You don't have to worry again for 24 hours. Now, that's really letting go of anxiety, don't you think? So it appears to me that wholehearted living is a lot of things. It's letting go of things that don't serve us well, isn't it? It's letting go of things that we really don't need. It's letting go of our limited beliefs. It's letting go of anything that causes us doubt. And it's embracing our uniqueness. It's embracing our wholeness. It's embracing our compassionate self. It's truly loving ourselves. We are all unique individuals, expressions of the divine. And do we make mistakes? Certainly. And then what do? We learn from them. We don't let them cripple us. We learn from our mistakes and we move on. You know, some of us have a little more difficult time than that because we have to sit there and beat on ourselves for a while. But we can learn from them and we can grow from them and we can move on. We don't have to stay there. Instead of asking why, ask why not? Why not me? Why not this? In this thing called you, Ernest Holmes says, if you wish to be successful, you must identify yourself with success. The law of identity is a definite thing. That with which you mentally identify yourself sets up an image of thought in your consciousness, which tends to attract the situations with which you are mentally identified. The subject state of your consciousness, which means the sum total of your unconscious thought process, is continually acting or repelling. This process goes on beneath the threshold of the conscious mind. So what I'm telling you today is let's identify with wholehearted living. Let's live from our hearts. Let's live from our whole self. USA Today reported that children laugh 400 times a day. Adults laugh 15. Now, I know some adults that I don't think could even make that quota. I had one guy, I was sure if he laughed, his face would crack. But perhaps it's because people think if you laugh, you're not taking life seriously. Why do children laugh? Because nobody's told them they can't. Nobody has told them not to. They laugh because they haven't learned that life is serious. They haven't learned to doubt everything they see and hear. And when they see a ladybug, they look at it with awe and they giggle. And they watch the ants as they carry the little crumbs. While you're stomping on them, they're watching the ants go carry the little crumbs across the picnic blanket, aren't they? And they laugh and they find joy in things that you and I may find annoying even. They clap with joy when the dog or the cat comes and nuzzles them. They are living life in the moment. They are not taking life seriously. Perhaps we think we don't have time to laugh. We think we don't have the time to laugh or to not take life seriously. But think about this. Think of what laughter is. They say laughter is good for your soul. Well, laughter is good for your body, too. It helps you fight infection. Did you know that? It suppresses the release of cortisol in your system. Laughter does. And cortisol weakens your immune system. It raises your threshold of pain, and it acts as a muscle relaxer. It increases your circulation capacity, and it strengthens your organs, and it makes your body more resistant to infection, and it boosts your energy level. Why aren't you laughing all the time? Why aren't you laughing? The same article says if you want to live longer, die laughing. And that's really nice. But Solomon said in Proverbs, a cheerful heart, back in Proverbs, the Old Testament, a cheerful heart is good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up the bones. So your homework for this week is not to take life so seriously. Live wholeheartedly. Love wholeheartedly, laugh wholeheartedly, and be compassionate with yourself. I love you. Love yourself. Bless you, and let us pray.